Welcome to Rise Above the Ashes podcast, where we break down the art of failure and learn why multiple failures equals true success if you just don't give up. In this podcast, we go deep with our guests to find out how they overcome some of the greatest obstacles in their lives and what makes them tick as a human being. Learn here how you can turn your failures into true success. In this episode, we speak to my good friend, Kenny Barnwell. He is a touring concert production manager, a serial entrepreneur, and an author of two career books. We find out how he went from homeless to being somebody that floats around the navigated world with country singers, rock musicians, some of the biggest names in the music industry. And we even hear big artist Seal singing country music. Listen up now. Kenny freaking Barnwell, how are you doing?
Man, I am doing awesome. What's up, Brandon?
So you are here in Atlanta today. What brings you into Atlanta?
Well, man, I am actually just traveling through for work. I tour with bands, and so we're playing a show tomorrow at the Fox Theater.
So Kenny Barnwell, you are a backstage touring crew production manager. What does that freaking mean?
Well, man, basically on this tour, I'm actually an instrument technician in backline, which is all the instruments on stage. But my normal production manager duties that I do is I basically put the production together. I hire the vendors, audio, lighting, video, whatever like that. Trucking. I do all the logistics, all the budgeting for putting these big, huge shows down the road.
Sarah Bareilles, big shows. Who are some of the biggest bands or some of the biggest musicians or whoever, whatever you want to call it? What are some of those names? Name drop some people.
Well, man, I have toured with people like Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber.
The Biebs.
Yes, the Biebs. Seal. Which I'm currently his production manager. Amos Lee, I'm his production manager and tour manager now. Mm-hmm. I'm on the road right now with Sarah Bareilles as her tech, as her instrument tech, guitars and piano. I did a decade with country bands, if you're into that. Travis Tritt, Clint Black, Trace Atkins, just to name a few.
The question is, are you into that?
And I've been into it now for 18 years, but 17 years on the road, so.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, let's start from the beginning. How about that?
Okay.
We need to curate a story to tell people how you rose above the ashes, how the ordinary Kenny Barnwell became the extraordinary Kenny Barnwell. You think you can do that?
Man, let's do it. Yeah, right, what you got?
Well, let's just start from the beginning. How did we meet?
Brandon. So, well, you and I went to probably middle school, definitely high school together, or at least a little bit of high school that I actually attended before I dropped out.
Yep.
But yeah, that's where we met. And of course, fast forward from being in school with you to I was 18, almost 19, or about 19, I guess. You and I had a little side hustle going on.
Pizza.
Yes. We used to hook up with this Little Caesars here up the street, make a bunch of pizzas, drive downtown Atlanta and sell them at colleges, basically, when the students came out.
Yeah. I think I was 19 at the time. And we had a side hustle, that's the word, the terms now that they call it. But I remember I was making $1,000 a week as a 19-year-old kid. And
that's what you were making? You weren't giving me that much.
sorry. I think Kenny worked for me at the time. I had a couple of guys. That was an interesting time. Yeah. I mean, we were loading up pizzas from this Little Caesars. Mm-hmm. The cost with the production of the pizzas or whatever, it was $2. And we had to pay back $3 to the owner of the Little Caesars. So he had a dollar markup, dollar profit. And then we could sell anything over that. Sell the pizzas for anything over that and keep the margin. And then I paid you and one or two other people. And I was making about $1,000 a week.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, man.
No, I didn't do it for very long before I found the music business. But obviously, that's still jumping pretty far forward. Do you want me to step back a little bit further?
Well, I just wanted to explain how we knew each other a little bit. And now we will hone it back down. So let's start from your 15 and 16-year-old self. You were homeless at that point. And that is a very interesting story for the listeners.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because you and I grew up in the same town. So, you know, it's like you think you know someone. Well, my parents went through a divorce when I was 14, as a lot of kids come through that type of that type of raising. And they made me choose where I wanted to be, you know, my dad or my mom. And naturally, I chose my hometown, you know, where I grew up. And that's where my dad ended up staying. Long story short there, I was the last kid left in the house. And my dad met another woman and started to have this relationship with her who had her own family. And my mom kind of did the exact same thing. She met a guy and started to build a family. And so there I was kind of feeling like an outcast. But during that time, I got hooked on drugs. Not just like smoking pot type drugs, but like I was doing at 15 years old, doing cocaine and acid and heavy drugs, drinking a lot. And I ended up dropping out of school. At that time, I was probably 15 and a half, almost 16, right, and went down to stay in Jacksonville, Florida, which we had a connection with in my family, my great-grandma's old house down there. And not really having the ability to have anywhere to go because of my parents' new families that they had, and not being able to stay with either one of them. I just kind of stayed in my van that I had. And oftentimes when the van wasn't running, literally sleeping on the sidewalks as a 16-year-old, strung out on drugs. I think I was telling you a little bit about this. Like, I remember when Y2K happened, you know, and the clocks were going to strike the year 2000. I remember being strung out on acid.
Right.
I'm not proud of this. I'm just saying. Right. I was strung out on acid, laying there in Jacksonville Beach, like to the point of tears, just thinking in my head, like, what am I doing with my life? You know, like I'm a 16-year-old. Like everyone that I knew, I was 16. I was kept thinking about you guys back here in Georgia, probably just going to high school. And here I am like working odd jobs just to buy drugs, you know?
I'm assuming I understand that was probably a hard time for you. What do you feel like you missed out on going through the dysfunction of the marriage, breaking up with your parents, going to taking on odd end jobs and just missing out on school? What do you feel like you missed out on doing that part of life versus the normal selection that a kid is? I don't know if that's a selection or not, but the normal route that a kid goes through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, looking back in hindsight, I don't feel like I really missed out on anything because if I wouldn't have gone through those things, dude, I would not be the guy that I am today. Yeah. And I am so happy to be the guy I am today. I mean, I'm dead serious. Like, I'm very, very proud of who I am. And I think all of that I went through back then gave me a leg up, honestly. Yeah. It hardened me to things that would have probably taken like a normal person down, you know?
Yeah. So how did you become homeless leading into becoming a production manager for some of the biggest names in music?
Well, I mean, that's obviously, you know, I'm a production manager now after 17 years of being in the music industry. But basically, at some point, when I was living in Jacksonville, on the streets or in my van or on people's that I knew's house, couches, things like that. It was at some point I just started to kind of like reflect on like where I was actually at with my life and what I was doing and relative to like what I knew that I was capable of and wanted to do. I mean, you know, I grew up really fast, you know, during that period. I mean, as you would when you're like, you're on your own and you're a teenager. And so, For me, it was really the realization that I wanted more, so I had to raise my standards. I had no business sleeping on the freaking sidewalks and on, you know, like I had no business getting strung out on drugs and begging for food money and like, but I was doing that and I wasn't raised that way, you know? I mean, I was raised in a Christian home and despite the divorce and all of that stuff, like we weren't like poor or anything. We were fine. You know, I wasn't raised this way, but here I was acting this way. And so I started to just take responsibility of my actions. I was about 17 and a half and I was like, I'm over this. Like I just can't do this anymore. And so I came back up here to Georgia. I bought this old van from my mother. Again, working odd jobs. I just paid her little by little. She had it sitting there. So she sold me this van. and still not having anywhere to go. I had some friends let me sleep on couches or sleep in this van, park in their driveways, leave before their parents got up, things like that.
So you invented Airbnb.
Yeah, pretty much from my van, which right. is funny because like I actually, you know, riding on these tour buses, I showed you my tour bus this morning with our bunks and everything. It's like, pretty cool. Always say that I went from living in my van to living in a bigger van.
Right.
But no, through that, it was all about taking responsibility and taking ownership of what I was doing and where I was at and raising my standards and then like closing that gap. So I didn't know about the music industry. I mean, that's kind of my passion now, which I'm sure we'll get into, but like, I just knew that I wanted more, so I had to do more in order to get there. And that's where you and I ended up kind of reconnecting to do the pizza slinging on the side. Because although, you know, you were doing the pizza thing more full-time and I was helping you here and there, it was like I was cutting lawns, I was building fences, I was, you know, working at an art gallery, like whatever I could do to make ends meet. Yeah. And then I met this lady who had a friend that owned what's called a stagehand company. Stagehands are local crew laborers that help out with concerts and events and, you know, all different types of production.
And this was interesting to you. This is something that were excited about.
I mean, I played music my whole life. You know, that was another thing too. I forgot to mention was like, I grew up with deaf parents and,
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I was the youngest of five and I had like my siblings would listen to music. And so that their music was my influence or church. And I took to playing the drums when I was a young kid as well as guitar. And even when I was bounding around homeless, sleeping wherever, I always had this one guitar with me. You know, like that was the only thing that I ever had. That was my medicine. And so I'd always loved music. I actually played music with your cousin, Shannon, a bit throughout the years.
What's up, Shannon?
And love that guy, by the way. And so whenever I met this lady that connected me with the stagehand company, she was actually remarkable, man. I'd always had this entrepreneurial kind of sense about me as well as this tenacity to do bigger things and better things and just figure stuff out. You know, again, I was a high school dropout. I ended up getting my GED, by the way, when I first moved back up here. But I had an idea, and I think this story is probably pertinent and relevant, but I had this idea to help our little town out during one of our biggest festivals of the year. We had this festival called the Gold Rush Festival. Yep. And it was a big parade day. And one thing that I learned, and mind you, I'm you know, just 19, like literally just turned 19 at the time. And a lot of the businesses around our town suffered during this one day because it was an arts and crafts festival. So the whole town comes down to the Main Street area and nobody's spending money at these businesses, you know? And so they suffered during this one day. So I had this big idea to put on a concert. Now, mind you, I know nothing about concerts. I just played music and there's a concert stage that's right off Main Street. And so I went down to the city hall to talk to whatever her name was that organizes all of the funds for the city. I pitched my idea for this business benefit concert. And so she said, well, look, the city, to rent the stage, it's like $300 and, you know, but we'll allow you to do this, you know? And so I went around and started hustling. I started going to all the businesses and signing up businesses at like $200 a pop to get to come down and have a set up tables and had an easy up tents for all these different businesses. And so they would come down and share their business materials and get to take advantage of the audience of the crowds that were down at business or the Gold Rush Festival. I called it the first annual right. business benefit concert. And so I pulled this thing off. I had like five bands that played. Yeah. I borrowed the PA system and all the tents and tables from the rec department, you know? And so we ended up raising like $1,000 for this mural to be painted over the stage, which the city never painted the mural. We gave them the money. But like, I was so proud of this, this experience. And one of the bands, I met this lady. Yeah. And this lady was like, well, listen, She found out about my situation. I was living in my van during all of this, you know, but I had this desire to create. And she goes, you ever considered like setting up concerts really for a living? And I didn't know that at the time that this lady was super connected. Like she had toured with Aerosmith and Hootie and the Blowfish and all these different big bands. And so I was like, well, what is this all about? And she goes, well, listen, I have this friend that owns a stagehand company. Mm-hmm. I was like, what's a stagehand? You know, so she tells me and she goes, go down there and you can get an interview and see if you can become a stagehand. So long story short, I did. I got the interview and I got on the stagehand call list to start me in this business.
That's incredible. So this is what ultimately led you into the career that you have now, you know, that you have now, that you've been doing for all these years. Mm. Man, it's that's a really cool story. You know what's funny is the Gold Rush parade is still doing it just like that all these years later. And I didn't know that you were involved.
What do you
with
mean,
that.
The business thing?
Yeah, yeah.
They still do that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they do.
Really? Wow.
I haven't been to one in like 5 years.
Yeah, but, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty cool. Last time I was there, they did. I didn't know that you were involved with that.
Oh, no, that was my thing, man. I just was like, you know, wanting to help contribute, if you will.
Yeah. So this lady, she opened the door to the professional side of this industry to you. What happens next?
Oh, dude. Well, what I thought was going to happen was all of a sudden I'm going to be backstage handing guitars off to artists and traveling the world. And it was far from that. So stagehands are what we call neck down laborers. So it's literally just a labor call list of people that like when tours or big events come through town, they need, like they have professional technicians in all these different departments, but then they just need people to help them set it up, to open cases, to unload trucks, to pull cables. Like it's called neck down because you just listen to what the technicians tell you to do and you do it, you know? So it's zero experience necessary. All you got to do is be able-bodied, you know?
Right.
And, so my process to actually get involved in that was the call list at the time was over 250 people. And this is when you and I were doing our thing. So I was like selling some pizzas and then I was, you know, trying to get on as a stagehand. Right. And so I get on this call list and my first job, they call me and they say, listen, this is we have a standby position. I'm like, well, what's that? They're like, a standby position is we book like, I don't know, anywhere from 2 to 5 extra people, depending on the size of the call, to come down there. Not to get paid, just to stand by in case somebody doesn't show up because stagehands are pretty unreliable. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I'm about it. So it was at the Georgia Dome, which I'm not even sure if it's around anymore, but
cool.
Wow. So I go down to the Georgia Dome. I pay like $8 to park and spend all this money, you know, driving and gas money and I like all the money I had. Okay. So I go to standby. And I check in with the project coordinator, the lead, the boss, you know, and I check in and I'm like, I look through the loading dock door that day at the Georgia Dome and I could see the field. I could see like them starting to set up the concert. I'm like, man, this is awesome. I was like, this is going to be so cool, you know? And then finally come the start time, all the stagehands had shown up and he's like, sorry, Kenny, not this time. You know, I'm like, shoot, dang, you know, like bummer, you know? So like but I was so excited. I could literally see the potential right through the loading dock doors. I was like, okay. So next day I get home, or actually that evening I get home, they're like, hey, Kenny, you want to come back again tomorrow? Standby position. There's this big TD Jakes conference. And I'm like, okay, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I want to do this, you know? So I, again, spend all this money to drive down there, pay to park. I'm like, I can't eat today, but at least I'm here, you know? So I get checked into standby, obviously not getting paid. Once again, everyone shows up. And I was like, man. So same thing the next day, because it was like, you know, a week, 2 week long conference. Same thing the next day, everybody shows up. Next day, everybody shows up. Next day, everyone shows up. I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like 6 times. I just don't know that I can do this. You know, it's like, so I go sell some pizzas with you. Yeah. I go cut some lawns, whatever, the next day. And then finally get another call. Hey, we have a standby position at the Phillips Arena.
Right.
I'm not even sure what it's called these days. But anyways, I go next door to the Phillips Arena, standby position. Everybody checks in. Sorry, we can't use you. I'm like, oh my gosh, you know. Yeah. Next day, same thing. Another show, same thing. Another show, same thing. 10 times go by. I'm like, man, I want to do this. And obviously people are doing this, but I don't think I can do this, you know? And then another time goes by, 11th time, I check in. By this time, like the steward knows me. I'm keeping it, like my attitude about it is like, oh, it's okay. It's okay. Really inside, I'm going, oh my gosh. Like I'm like inner turmoil. Maybe I should just go get a regular job.
Wow.
Like just go and like go back to delivering pizzas or go get in a construction job or maybe ask Brandon, does he got anything, you know?
Yeah.
And so finally the 12th time, and this was the turning point, the 12th time I show up and at the Georgia Dome again, this was for a big like Herbal Life convention. And I show up and I'm like, just standing there. I'm optimistic. I'm keeping a good attitude, but I'm just like, man, I'm out of money. And this has got to be the last time. Cause if I come down there to do this again, I mean, and get told no again, it's definitely going to crush me, you know? And so here I am 12 times of being told no, driving down, spend all this money. And I check in with the steward and I'm waiting. I'm like the first person there too. Cause like the standbys are coming first curve, first serve type thing, you know? And so I'm waiting. People are showing up and I'm like kind of looking at them, checking off names on the list. And then I just see the guy look up at me, big old grin on his face. And he's like, Kenny, you're in, you know? And I was just like, oh my God, you know, it was awesome. Oh man. And then the guy goes, hey, listen, I'm going to put you on lighting. Lighting is like the heaviest, hardest work. He's like, are you ready for this? I'm like, dude, like you have no idea what I've been through to be ready for this.
Right.
Like, of course I'm ready for this, you know? And since then, I've never done a standby call ever again. They actually told me that I was like the only guy to ever do that many standbys because most people just give up. I mean, it's a labor list, you know? Right. The standards are pretty low, yeah. You know?
Holy cow, man. Well, first of all, I had no idea you were dealing with us way back then. I mean, you put on a good show. I mean, you know, that's a struggle. What did you learn through that process that you could contribute to mentally, I guess, to succeed? And then what does success mean to you?
Oh, man. I think what I learned is about just having the responsibility and the self-ownership and self-awareness of my capabilities, like, you know, that I could literally do it one more time. And that one more time going down there could have been the difference of me sitting here in front of you right now, talking about this, or working a regular job, or who knows what my life would have been. But like, I just know that like, when you see possibility and potential, if there's anyone else in your life that's doing what you want to do or what you desire to do, it's possible, you know? And that's one thing that I've always taken with me, like looking through those loading dock doors, seeing crew guys out there, setting up the concert. I'm going, somebody's going to do it. They've done it. There it is. I can do it, you know?
And as long as you lash yourself to those types of people, you become a product of your environment, the people you hang out with the most.
I mean, it's obvious. Yes, I totally agree. And as far as what success means to me, I think success means, you know, a wide variety of things. I have like success, fiscal success, obviously, you know, my fiscal goals, and there's that fiscal success. But I think generally, I think it would be to have this awareness that there's always more that I can do and give and grow and become.
I got you. So you have an interesting story of how you represent that daily in life with some of the biggest names. You were telling me that on the ride in from Atlanta to the studio here. You've got a friend and his name is Seal.
Yeah, well, friend, you know, he's my boss. I know him, you know. I always say, you know, I don't work for these artists. Mm-hmm. I work with these artists to accomplish their thing, you know, because I always treat myself like a business, which allows me to give all of me, not just what's asked of me. And so, and I've done this even when I was a stagehand, just an employee or whatever. Now I'm quite literally a business. I mean, I'm a freelance production manager, tour manager and everything, but Seal specifically, Yeah. Seal, the big guy. Yeah. I've been with him for like the past 3.5 years as his guitar tech and production manager.
Yeah. I heard a glimpse of Seal singing country on the way here. Was that right?
Well, I actually, I sing some country music a little bit. I love country music, like 90s country, older country, people like Keith Whitley and Blaze Foley, people like that, some old King George, but Yeah. Every artist that I've ever worked with, I've always sung, whatever. I've always sung their songs country styles. Like even, you know, Ariana Grande and Bieber, I'd be like, bang, bang, into the roof, you know, like whatever. But like Seal, I would always sing Seal's stuff to him. And one day I was like singing the song Crazy. You know the song Crazy?
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, you're never gonna survive unless you get a little crazy. And so I would sing this to him and he would love it. Like he'd laugh. He's a big jovial guy anyways. He's awesome. Yeah. And so I get off a plane one day after doing a show with him and he just sends me a text. And he was so excited. He sends me this text of him. He just made up a country song in his head, recorded it on his phone and texted it to me. I mean, like epic, you know, the legend. Yeah, so yeah. You can't make that stuff up.
You think he would get upset if you played the little text there?
No, I'll play you a little snippet of it.
Let's hear this. I'm sure the audience would love to hear this.
Okay. and of course, now every time I see this guy, this is what he sings to me.
Oh, buddy, man, where have you gone to? Buddy, man, where is your hand? I need a garden, one to come back to. Oh, buddy, man, a promised land.
Oh, dude, that's so cool.
Yeah, man. You can't make that stuff up, man.
Yeah, dude, that's so cool. So
that guy's awesome.
Yeah. So you've hung out with some of the, I guess serving others, and you've made a career serving others.
Yes.
Very well-known people and in the music industry. Who has been your favorite person you've helped and served over the years?
Gosh, man.
Name dropping. Maybe you don't want to say that. I don't know.
It's up well, to you. I mean, look, you know, fact of the matter is like I love everybody, man. I mean, I've loved all the artists that I've worked with, you know, for their different reasons, like Clint Black, man, one of the just most straight up guys. And I love him. You know, I was with the band Perry for a long time and their family. They're just so nice, so great people. Obviously, Ariana Grande, sweetheart. I met my wife on that tour and she's so nice. You know, the kid's cool, Justin. Mm-hmm. The big guy, Seal's awesome. You know, actually, one guy I'm working with now, Amos Lee, he actually came and sang at my wedding, which was pretty amazing. You know, like just offered to sing at my wedding, showed up and did it. Like,
that's cool.
Man, I mean, as far as favorite goes, it's just, they're all awesome. But what my favorite thing about all of them collectively is the fact that they're all, just so themselves. They take ownership of themselves and they've built things. And it's super infectious, but they've built things that are just so true to them. Like you see these people and just like, you know why they're where they're at, you know? So it's just, I love them all.
Yeah. Well, and we see why you're where you are at. So that's...
Hey, thanks, Brandon.
Yeah, man. So what do you feel like you have done to design your life the way you have? What was the most important thing you've done to make that pivot? I know we've told a lot about the story already, but what do you feel like has been the single most, other than taking responsibility, as you so put it, what was the biggest thing that you feel like you've grasped over 18 years in this industry, serving others, helping people, you know, get to the next level? I know you have a teaching. You teach through books and you have meetups. Why don't you tell us about that, but tell us what you've done to get there, what you're teaching and how you pulled it all together to help serve the community.
Yeah. Well, as you said, I have books and stuff like that. Basically, I wrote and published my first book in 2015, which is called Backstage Pass, 10 Things to Consider When Becoming a Touring Music Tech. It's kind of a long title, but touring music tech, basically in using that terminology versus the word roadie. Most people think of roadies, they think of sex, drugs, and rock and roll. So I kind of wanted to steer clear of that terminology, even though these days I'm less caring about it. But in 2015, I wrote the book and put it out there. I was on tour with Ariana Grande, and I did it, to be honest with you, just as a challenge. I did a 30-day challenge on how to write, publish a best-selling book on Amazon in 30 days. So from conception to publish, I achieved just that. But the best thing to do is to write about what you know about. So it's been that, man. It's been about challenging myself to realize that I'm capable, obviously taking responsibility, but realizing that I'm capable. I'm not bound by my circumstances and my past and, you know, being a GED, you know, a dropout, no, a drug user and all these things. Like, none of that stuff defines me. It's only about what I'm doing now. And so what I'm doing now is just sharing that possibility and that potential with anyone that's interested and that gets excited about what I'm doing and go, man, I would love to do that. And so it started with the first book, which is kind of like an overview of like basically how they can do exactly what I did in a step-by-step way, how I went from entry level, no experience necessary, with no experience, no college degree, starting as a stagehand, becoming a technician or an engineer or designer or whatever they're choosing is in the industry, and then being able to kind of build a long, successful career at that. And then since then, I have a very a rapidly growing, very engaged group on Facebook called the Backstage Crew Community. And there's a lot of people in there that are shifting their careers forward. We do a lot of free trainings and stuff. And I travel the world and do meetups with my community. I've also wrote the manual for stagehands called Stagehand 101. So that's available. Just kind of more foundational tools to help these people move their careers forward. And I also have a 50-video series course called the Touring Music Tech Course. It teaches people more step-by-step on how to, like, again, do what the book teaches, but in way more depth and taught by me. I do coaching, and then I also speak at events, things like that.
Yeah. So if you, to the listening audience right now, if you are wanting to rise above the ashes and you don't have an avenue, then Kenny may have the source for you. So where do you live currently?
I live in Los Angeles at the moment.
You said you've lived all over the globe. Where three or four places have you been?
Yeah. Well, the last few, I mean, my wife and I, we lived in Manhattan in New York City. We lived in London, England. Mm-hmm. We honestly sold everything a few years ago and we went and lived in Airbnbs all around the world. So all over Europe and all kinds of places. So it's been pretty amazing to be able to have that type of flexibility.
Yeah. So you're living life by design and not by default.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, totally. I mean, in order for us to even desire or be able to live that desired life, like, it took us going, okay, well, this is what we want to do. Where can we do it now? Okay, well, not necessarily. So how can we get there? And that's all we did, was just literally close the gap on figuring out how to get there. I had to, you know, in order to move out to Los Angeles, I had to leave the country music world, which was a big deal. I spent a decade working for country bands. And I say that because, like, if you work for country bands, you have to live in Nashville. Right. They don't fly you to and from gigs. But because I don't work in country and I also work at a certain level, I only take certain gigs at a high level that they're willing to fly me to and fro. So I literally was able to live in London or around Europe or New York or all these expensive places and have lived the life that I want because I've made those decisions in my career to navigate that way.
Right, right. Well, in this episode, we've already learned how you've risen above the ashes or rose above the ashes to become who you are currently and et cetera. What do you feel like has been your greatest failure, your obstacle, your challenge that you had to overcome? You may have already talked about it, but, you know, what is it, that one failure that you feel like you just made it, you know, you conquered?
Man, I'm still working through it, and it's progressive because, you know, when you're an entrepreneur and you know this, Brandon, like, we live, especially when you're a teacher, I live in self-doubt.
Yeah.
Like, I live there, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I'm constantly thinking, am I worthy of sharing this? Am I even enough? Like, how much do I actually, you know, how much value am I really bringing? Like, I'm constantly, resisting my own self and with negative self-talk. So I think, you know, as far as failures go, I don't necessarily look at things as failures, even though I've done so many things that haven't worked out. I just kind of consider it a process of elimination. Mm. But like,
Such a good way of putting it.
Yeah. But the truth of the matter is like, it's really just beating me at my own BS, you know? Right. I mean, again, it's like all of these things, like I have a third book that's been sitting in my phone for a while. It's pretty much done. All I got to do is kind of put it out there. And there's so many times where I'm just like doubting, you know, the value that I'm actually giving in that or really just that day-to-day discipline of actually putting my actions where my mouth is on a lot of different projects because I want to do so much and I'm going to do so much, but it's about kind of like discipline, focus, and beating that self-doubt, you know?
You feel like you are an upbeat, positive person?
Yes. Oh,
okay. Yeah. I mean, on your Facebook and everything I see, you're just like, you're so positive and, you know, people are just commenting all the time. It's actually uplifting to see your post come through my thread because I really don't look at other people's posts. I do look up yours every once in a while. It's like, oh, you kind of get kicked in the nuts. You're like, oh, look at Kenny's post. That's really cool. So,
thanks, man.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you doing that. Well, let's merge into some speed round, whatever you want to call it, round of questions. And you told me I think this is your favorite book. You told me of a story on the way here to the studio, but what's your favorite book and why?
Oh man. I mean, I have a bunch of favorite books. Can I just say though, like I do have a bunch of favorite books. I mean, I've read like Who Moved My Cheese a bunch and I've read, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, like a bunch of his stuff and Trump stuff and Tony Robbins. But one that I just recently read, man, like I just finished this 2 days ago, which blew my mind is David Goggins. You know, David Goggins, Can't Hurt Me.
Yeah,
you know
so
that
good.
Book? Yeah. Oh my gosh. That just wrecked me recently. I was just like, who am I?
I know. Like, dude, you think you're tough mentally? Like, holy man.
Yeah, there's so many good books. So recently, my most favorite recent book would be that one, Can't Hurt Me.
Yeah, it's so good. If you have not read that, this is going to be in the show notes. Get this book immediately, guys.
So good.
What's your favorite documentary or movie and why?
Man, I love I Am Not Your Guru, Tony Robbins. I mean, I've been to a Tony Robbins event. I'm a firewalker. I've walked on fire.
Really?
Yes. UPW back in 2015. Yeah, 2015 UPW. Oh man, so amazing. Tony Robbins is the real deal in that. And I think that documentary just like is so transparent on his ability just to understand people, you know, and help people help themselves.
Yeah. What I like about him is he's done so much for the community. He's made a lot of money. He's helped so many people, you know, while making money. Like, he just doesn't have to do this anymore, but yet he keeps going out there and doing it over and over and over again.
It's that mission, man.
Yeah.
You know? It's not the destination, right? It's always that journey. I mean, I can't imagine anyone, myself included, ever stopping creating, you know, and helping. So it's empowering, man. I freaking love that documentary.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's one of my favorites as well. Who's your favorite musician?
Man.
Name dropping again.
No, I mean, I'm jaded, you know, to be honest with you. Like, I've seen some of the most amazing musicians in my day. Like, it's hard to say as far as, like, specifics because I also know that there's a lot of artists and musicians from a musicianship standpoint that the society thinks are just so freaking amazing. And I've been around them in rooms and gone, okay, they're okay. But do you know this other person that no one ever's heard of? So some of my favorite musicians you would never, ever know and will never know.
Awesome. What advice would you give your 16-year-old self knowing that you were going through all that stuff way back when?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, just to realize that you have enough time. Like you got plenty of time. I would say patience and twofold. I would say kind of like what Gary Vaynerchuk talks about, mentor of ours, like, you know, to be patient in the long run, but be impatient on your day-to-day efforts.
Yeah. So good. What advice would you give your 30-year-old self?
My 30-year-old self, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I would say to practice daily discipline with intention. I mean, it's literally the daily habits and the daily discipline things that I know more and more and more that really helped me with my shifts. I mean, you know, I think that's it. Discipline.
Yeah. Well, do you have any ask for the audience or anybody to watch you or anything like that? Anything you want to announce that you got coming up or coming out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got a couple of new programs that I'm releasing. Two specifically, I'm doing a live teaching program, the Backstage Crew Career Course. It's for anyone that's like either just started as a stagehand or is about to want to go to school for this. Or this is my pilot program. So it's starting December 9th, 2020 or 2019. So it's starting really, really soon, but we will be recording it and offering it later. So that's coming up. And then one thing I'm really most excited about is my Life After the Road program. So many touring people struggle to have anything of substance to stand on. So off the road. So many, sadly, I mean, I'm touring with a guy now at 74 years old, still touring because kind of needs to, you know? And it's just like, I see so much potential and the tools that we have these days. I mean, I've built multiple businesses that have been successful from my cell phone, from the bus, you know? And so that's what I'm teaching next is like helping people figure out, you know, how to spend the next 18 to 24 months of their bus life to build something that they can now have freedom, you know?
Yeah. Are you going to hang up being a production manager anytime soon in the near future? Or is
this
something?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, at some point I need to make a bigger impact. So, you know, I want to do and going to do a lot more things to do that, you know? So eventually the goal for me is to take my, you know, 18 years of experience and allow me to share it and teach it and speak it and all the things through all the mediums, you know, books and videos and trainings and speaking engagements, which I'm doing a lot more of. I just recently did one in Nashville. I mean, sooner than later, probably maybe another year of touring or so.
Where can people find you, Kenny?
KennyBarnwell.com.
Dang, you got that domain. I wish I could have mine. Somebody's holding BrandonThompson.com for ransom. Any social media outlets your own?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'm on Twitter and Instagram and stuff, but Facebook, man, I just think Facebook is just a brilliant platform. So come check me out on Facebook, friend me. I'm a public profile on there, so I don't have anything to hide. I don't talk politics and things like that. I just, man, like Brandon shares, like, I literally love to be nice and kind and encouraging and empowering. And that's, I mean, it's not just like my brand, but like, and it's not a put on. I love it. I walk it. And which makes me a kind of a unique individual in the music business for sure.
Well, all right, Kenny. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for telling us how you rose above the ashes. I am looking forward to taking you back into Atlanta and we're going to beat that traffic soon. So thank you so much for coming in town. And dude, thanks, man. It's just been a blessing, man.
I love what you're doing. Dude, seriously, guys, Brandon Thompson has got it going on. I love this guy and he knows what he's talking about. I mean, it's amazing what you're doing, Brandon. Seriously, it's really cool. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for listening to Rise Above the Ashes, the podcast. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at our website at riseabovetheashes.com.